Ancient Black American history, our pre-Columbian history, our Black Mesoamerican history. Absolute. Every metric will be covered. We'll try to just go through anthropology, archaeology, genetics, of course, oral history, linguistics, historical wars, cultural affinity, antiquity, testimony, all that, reclassification. And Lou, you very much have a great knowledge on a lot of this stuff. I definitely wanted to have you here to discuss a lot of it as well. When it comes to our oral history of it, I just find it kind of fascinating as well, that we just, we had this kind of shared oral history that really had nothing to do with like meeting anywhere to conjure up anything like this. And when it comes to having this shared oral history, it spans throughout the nation of our culture. Anybody else want to expound on that?
Talking about the oral history.
Yeah, we kind of grew up hearing that we were native here, we were also the Indians here, or something like that, of that nature.
Right. I mean, that's just kind of ingrained in our culture. Like my granddaddy from Northern Alabama, Rogersville, Alabama, his mama was a full-blooded Native American, So I mean that's just I mean and I mean yeah, that's just a fact. Like that's not even like a well is it I mean no like my granny today remembers his mama Grandma Dulce, so it's like I mean that's not like it's just like the audacity of people to sit here and tell us that we're just lying and making shit up. Like my granny who I talk to every day, like she's lying about meeting her granny. Like, what the fuck? Like, it's very audacious in my opinion. But I mean, for whatever reason, it's just a thing for people to try to tell us, that, but they're just making it up because, just crazy shit, man.
But hold on, and what's worse, on the other side of the spectrum, you have white people who are not looking like anything like Native Americans. They're claiming 1/64, 1/2, 1/4. Oh yeah, we're Cherokee by my great great grandmother, 1/5, and everyone's like, oh yeah, maintain your heritage. That's everything I've heard since I was an immigrant coming to America. When white people say they're Cherokee, nobody asks, where's the receipt on that? They don't look Cherokee.
Yeah, the question is almost never there. And it's funny because I had I was told that as well, growing up. I never put too much stock into it until I started looking up more of the history into it in the academic field. But I recently asked my grandma, I was like, were we always here? He said, yeah. She said it so astoundingly, like she was so excited. Like, absolutely, we were always here. And then she also said something about the fact that the series Roots also covered it. I haven't seen Roots in like a good, like a large portion of it, so I can't really say what they covered in that series, but she did say they covered it.
They threw something like they threw a little hint in there in that movie about Nat Turner, that Nate Parker made like 5 years ago, Birth of a Nation. When he was born, they took the slaves had a ritual for newborns where they would take them out, and it was black Native. He took it to a black Native American tribe, and they did some initiation ritual or something. It was like something they do with all the newborns, and yeah, they were black Native Americans in Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that shared oral history, I don't think it's something to just lay to the wayside at all. But all right, then let's move on. Let's talk about. Let me see here. And want to be clear here. And we're gonna get to this later, but yeah, there was when it comes to genetics, we're talking about two founding populations here. We're talking about, yes, the redskin natives that we're accustomed to and know about, but there's also a lot of the black skin natives that have, typical African features. I want to go into linguistics. We do have a linguistic connection as well. When you look into quite a few of the tribes, uh-oh, we lost Lou. Oh, here he goes, right, hold on. I'm just adding Lou back real quick. Must be lost in the matrix. But let me talk about, or should I just wait?
I mean, you can get it going and he'll just come back through.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right, so at least I know where to pick up from. All right, so yeah, I wanted to get into linguistics. There is a lot of Black indigenous languages that people may or may not know about. The Seminoles, they spoke a, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Miccosukee language, the Yamasee of Florida. They were also in Georgia. They spoke a Hitchiti language. The Shinnecock and the Wampanoags, they spoke a Algonquian language. And then we also know about the Tut language that was also invented later on as well with the chattel slavery, Black Americans as well. And so when we talk about this linguistic connection, there's something to really talk about from a cultural continuity as well. I have found out that, you know, I found it funny. And Lou also posted about this, about the first successful corn harvest. So the first, according to historical publications, in the fall of 1621, the colonists' first corn harvest was a major success, providing them with enough food to make it through the next winter. They hosted a group of about 90 Wampanoags and their Algonquian-speaking neighbors, which I'm assuming is also the Shinnecock. So it's just amazing to me that the first successful corn harvest wasn't until 1621. We know that the first successful colony in America wasn't until 1619, when Blacks were started to get heavily involved in it. They didn't have any type of successful colony or cultivation until 1619, when we got involved. And so when we're talking about this Algonquian language, the Wampanoags, the Shinnecock tribe were the ones that in large part spoke this language. And if you look at the Wampanoags, they, even to this day, and if you look at old pictures, have a large population of Black people involved. And I'll post some pictures as well.
you gotta call them slaves.
You're right. You got to call them slaves. I mean, that's just, I mean, that's the way we just try to erase our history, or from the detractors anyway. I'm going to post a picture from the Council of Algonquian Indians of the Northeast, the Wampanoags of 1910, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I just find that connection to be very funny again. They didn't have a successful harvest until we got involved for it.
Yeah.
I want to post a picture. Go ahead, Lou.
Yeah. Furthermore, I was stunned by the portraits and images they had produced from that time period. So there was no transatlantic slave trade going to colonial America at that point. And the what was his name? Squanto? The guy who helped the pilgrims develop this whole farming and plantation system for their corn harvest. He himself is depicted, raw as you are born, as a Negroid, Mongoloid, Black Indian. Just flat out. There's no disguising it. This guy is from Asia, but he's a Native American. So when they keep telling FBA people, your grandmother is not an Indian, I'm just like, my mind was blown. Like, hey, I'm looking at an Indian. Like, put this guy on a horse, give him a headdress. That's what you call a stereotypical Indian with a big nose and the dark skin, everything. It's like, and he's in the 1600s before African imports begin. teaching them how to survive on U.S. soil, and they will still tell you to your face, oh no, he just washed ashore and just knew how to grow corn, which is from further south in Latin America. So I'm amazed at all these people, these black people with degrees, who are paid every day to know this same information that anyone can find on a public Google search, and they'll turn around and say, FBA people have no indigenous claim to U.S. territory. They are not native tribes. Like, that's heresy. That's treason. Like, the white people have already shown you his portrait, and they even show you the whitewashed images afterwards. So they're like, yeah, we can't have him too Negro. That's clearly a native Indian. It's like, wow. Like, how do FBA people feel about that information just being sitting on the internet, not even being called to attention? And I found it by mistake looking for corn research and rice research.
Yeah, that was crazy that you stumbled upon that and found that, because with the help of you, I was able to make that connection as well. Even seeing the tools that were similar to Africans as well, using those grading tools that were similar as well in American. And there's a lot of tools and a lot of things that are going to be shown to be very similar here throughout this discussion.
So hold on. And they were also trading with the Olmec civilizations to the south of them for hundreds of years. So they can't even say that Europeans brought sailing and international trade between the New World cultures, because the Mississippi Delta cultures already have artifacts exchanged between the Virginia East Coast Indians and the Olmecs. So trade was going on with or without white people. We don't owe them shit for our culture or civilization or technology. It's not a concept. Like, we got to dump all this bad information.
And just for shits and giggles, I just picked up some business.
And it was an older dude that I just asked him. I said, hey, first I asked him, you know, FBA or whatnot. Then I asked him, does your family have an oral tradition of, you know, coming from the Americas? And he said, yeah, you know. So, I mean, it's just, I just want to throw it out there. Like, you know, that's, mm-hmm. it's just common for that to be.
Oh. Yeah, I actually asked someone at an AutoZone, a black woman at an AutoZone as a manager, and she got into this whole backstory about how her people are Gullah Geechee Indians off the coast of where I live, and they're still fighting white lawyers to this day. Every like 3 years or so, the white people on the island will sue the other part of the island, which is the black natives, to try and force them to sell the other half of the land. So I'm like, the Gullah Geechee are still fighting to hold on to what little land they own as natives. And I don't hear anything from the federal government talking about that. It's like, that's a genocide.
Yeah, that's what.
That's the definition of a genocide.
That's what Marcel. You know, he's in South Carolina. I think he is Gullah Geechee, but that's one thing he always kind of brings up is how, they're always trying to fuck them over on their land, you know.
Yeah, I'm in southern Georgia, so we're not even talking about the same state, and it's still the same problem. And they're telling us it's not a race problem. It's like, bro, you're wild right now.
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta, man. I mean, yeah, it's definitely a thing, man. It's definitely a thing.
Hold on. Just another quick question I had. Who is going to certify these Gullah Geechee people as natives? Is that the U.S. government or who did the $5 Indians go to?
And that's
to keep adding all these white people.
That's something I wanted to talk with Bodie and Ashton about, you know, because that's that's the misnomer right there. See, what do you officially recognize as this label that you call native, as that you whites call Native American? That's what 90% of the naysayers really get really fucked up on. They really get fucked up on the officiating title that white people give on this, you know. In their minds, when white people label you something, that's what you are, and anything else is just nonsense. And that's where, you know, I think they get it confused. Like you said, when would the black Gullah Geechee be recognized as the Native Americans that they are? Well, they'll never be recognized as the Native Americans that they are, because the U.S. government just does not recognize our people are people with this phenotype as Native Americans. And even the ones who have very clear legitimate claims through, you know, slave records of being enslaved by the Cherokees, even them, they get ousted, you know. They're not even claiming direct descent. They're just claiming, you know, on it. They're just making claim through, you know, slavery and reparations and stuff. But it's like, you know, there is definitely an effort to, you know, dismiss
erase whitewash. That's why I thought these conversations were so important. We need to come down with one term for what's going on in most of these situations. That way we aren't using three different words to repeat the message.
Right.
Like, we got to codify all our vocabulary. We got to do something because this is getting extremely dangerous for us.
Right.
Like, the Gullah Geechee situation, even just in my casual research on them, studying the Black Hebrew Israelites, they come up again. In my casual research on slave breaking of the Virginia Indians who were deported in the early 1600s, the tribe belonging to Pocahontas, her black father told his people they will never get justice in these white man courts. And they betrayed him, and he went off alone with his small faction to some island off the coast. And when the white people turned on the rest of the tribe, they enslaved the whole tribe and killed, wiped them out. But they took them, put them on boats, and shipped their asses down to Barbados.
Damn.
And down there.
Yeah, speaking of Pocahontas' father, I'll just put a description of him up in the Jumbo Tron.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna get down to witnesses in a minute as well. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, Aromo. So yeah, I wanted to definitely just make sure people can see also on the Jumbotron that we got from the Wampanoags. It was, you see Grandpa there with
Wampanoag.
Yeah, the same feather headdress, and UPenn also corroborated that a lot of these black figures wore a lot of these feather skirts and feather headdresses, and that they were to basically supposed to resemble the American Indians of that time. I can post that in verbatim. That's been posted in Scholar. The next slide also is the Shinnecock tribe members that I talked about earlier as well. Again, a lot of the same feather headdresses, and again, a lot of the members remain of a black phenotype as well. So I think that's important to highlight. The oral tradition as well. So when we break this down, you know, people have this shared camaraderie, and I always think that's beautiful. Let me. Are we done with linguistics?
One more thing. I think y'all mentioned some sort of connection between Virginia and South America.
South America, and the Caribbean.
Yeah, if you look at the group of people that you were just talking about, with Pocahontas' family, the name of the Confederacy is Powhatan. And if you look at the in South America and not South America, but the southern part of North America and Mexico, that was actually an Olmec calendar system. It was called Powhatan. And coincidentally, about last week, the UFC fighter from Brazil, he has an indigenous name. His name is Powhatan too. So that's a linguistic connection.
Okay, hold on. Can you post that somewhere? I can retweet that and keep that in my collection.
What's his name again? I kind of missed it on my end.
Alex Pereira Powhatan.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, I'll post.
Gotcha. Hold on. Who's speaking? Because I need to get the receipts from that person.
Yeah, that's me. I'll send it to you.
Okay, thank you. Also, of the linguistics. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. My bad.
Yeah, I posted off the top of my memory the word Indio and Negro. When I was going through the Brazilian stuff years ago, their translations literally said Indio and Negro are synonyms. They're interchangeable in the middle of sentences. So there was no confusion in the white Brazilian population about natives being black. They literally saw them as Negroes. So when modern people tell me that nonsense, I immediately pull a red flag in my brain like, hey, that person hasn't read any of their own white history. Because they put it down on record. It's like in private journals and public laws, Indio equals Negro. The end. There's no debate there. Okay. Next thing on linguistics. In North America, cornbread, the thing black people are famous for all across the American South, for making properly. That's what everyone tells me. I ate it from a black family, I ate it from a white family. They're right. Black people make cornbread properly. So I'm eating the cornbread and I go look it up. I'm like, where did this delicious thing come from? And it says right there in the Wikipedia archives, oh, cornbread used to be called Indian flatbread or Injun flatbread, I-N-J-U-N flatbread. So I was like, is an Injun a slur? Like, what the fuck? Wait, hold on. It's like, why would you name the food only black people can make Indian food? Oh, the gears in my fucking head start turning. I was like, Jesus.
They like to leave that out when they say that all of our culture comes from Africa.
Yeah.
That's heavy. That's heavy. Do me a favor. Make a, when you got time, man, like type a post and like send that to me so I can, you know, do some more research into that, because that's heavy right there. That is.
Yeah, you ain't know cornbread was indigenous?
No.
Yeah, no. Because you got to think about it comes from corn, and maize, corn, is from America. And I was going to actually get into that. I was going to get into the food and the cultural continuity of our food as well.
Linguistically, Trey, I saw what you just posted with the names.
Yeah.
What you should do, go look at a map of Minnesota and look at those names that they use. If you heard them names, you would think that they came straight out of a black woman's mouth.
Cuz. Let me tell you. I went to Colorado for the first time earlier this year in February. It's a big ass fucking park there. It's like, I forget the name of it, but it's like Shaniqua Park or some shit. It's literally like some shit like that. And I'm like, oh my God. The first thing I thought about was this meme right here. I'm like, damn. Like, that just really stuck in my mind. But yeah, I mean, I imagine that all over the Midwest, like you just said, like in Minnesota and shit. I would have never guessed fucking Colorado, though. I would have never guessed that, man.
It's in most of the places where the towns and everything didn't get renamed. But it'd be in the whitest places. It'd be crazy. It'd be like, yeah, Shaniqua River or something.
Yeah, I'm gonna find the name of that park. I'm a post. And I screenshotted the shit when I was there just because it just amazed me that much just how blatant the shit was. Like, I'm like, oh, my God. Like, but yeah,
Hey, this is a Lucifer, FBA Trey. I posted in the group chat. I have it under a post about Latino racism, where they see the black California Indians. And I'm pretty sure I put the corn post in there.
Bet. I'm going to check it out. Thanks.
Yeah, and Lou kind of, you know, pivoted to the topic I was going to get into, which was about food continuity. Cornbread was one of them. So, yeah, absolute. And I think it's funny when we're talking about cornbread, because when we're talking about cornbread, you know, people want to, the detractors will say, well, we learned it from the Indians. But, like, the vast majority of us were not with the Indians if we were in chattel slavery. So why is it that it's prevalent within our culture all while we were in chattel slavery? So you just have to make sense of that in the first place. Cornbread is a prevalent dish within Black American culture. Another dish I wanted to expound upon was grits, because grits also comes from corn as well. Another pervasive dish that is found within Black American culture. We add shrimp, fish to it, you know, all types of, you know, good things to it. And, you know, just that pervasive aspect to it, you know, makes us unique outside of African dishes as well. Fried chicken.
Hold on. This is loose. I forgot to mention barbecue. In one of the Florida Spaniard references, they said they learned how to make barbecue from the native blacks of this land. Mm-hmm. So even barbecue, which black people are also credited in modern times with being the best at cooking, is already historically credited two black Indians. So what's going on here? How is no one questioning that?
That's deep. That's deep. But one thing I think that a lot of people should consider is don't look to white people to validate this information. I think that's where shit gets confusing. When you look, when you expect for them to say, when you expect for them to just come up and just confess and say, oh, we've been lying. I think that's where some niggas get hung up in this shit, and they expected some big DNA test to come out and prove it. Dog, the way that shit intertwined and they're lying about, they're not going to come out like that with it.
Yeah. And that's absolutely true. And that's why, you know, we're here to really shape the
what's up
conversation of here. Congoy, we're gonna let you right back up as soon as we wrap up around genetics, all right?
Man, there's no such thing as ancient black American history.
Yeah.
And then that right there, that's a foreign agent sent from the country of Nigeria.
Yeah, hold on. I'm just gonna remove him because we don't have time for this babbling nonsense anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he can come back up for the rapid fire, but not right now, Congoy. We're talking about just straight up facts. We're not trying to be here to troll and shit. Let me add Trey back. All right, and so I wanted to expand upon fried chicken as well. Fried chicken, another pervasive dish within our culture. And then I heard somebody try to detract and say that it was the Scots that were the ones that taught us about fried chicken. The Scottish did not come until the 1800s. And then on top of the fact that when we're talking about fried chicken, or soul food for that matter, when you are culturally tied to things, you bring that culture with you, right? The Scots weren't the ones bringing around soul food and fried chicken. In fact, if you look into the GIs that went over to the Vietnam War, they're the ones that brought over fried chicken and other soul food dishes to that area and around the world because there was a cultural continuity. So if it was anybody else to bring it, it would have been the Scots if that was the case. Unfortunately, it was not them. It would have been us, the people who actually carry on the cultural traditions. Trey, you have something to say about that?
No, I was just going to say, we also went to South Korea and, taught them, the art of fried chicken. And, now they got the whole Korean fried chicken thing popping off. So, yeah.
Yep, they're putting in their films, by the way, to replace Black. Oh, and that's a whole nother conversation for another day, because we got to talk about them fucking black Koreans. All over Pinterest, there's group photos of Korea 100 years ago. Them motherfuckers blacker than me. Like, holy shit, and there's hundreds of them.
If you've ever brought them up to, like, a lot of modern Chinese people, they'll say, oh, it's just the photo. Oh, it's just the bad lighting.
Hold on. That's why I have my Pinterest collection in my pinned comment. I have a Korean section, and one of the distinctive pictures I have is the black elder Koreans wearing their royal aristocratic gowns at a wedding, and there's half-breed Koreans in the middle of the picture. So they can't say the picture is flawed, because it's just the picture of a group shot of a family, one genetic family. But they're definitely swirling them out to turn them white. Mahor La Raza in Korea 100 years ago. Jesus Christ.
And I'm going to be honest. I think that's what, the whole deal with letting Asians up into this whole white power ring is about. I think, like you just said, there was an earlier La Raza over there that the white powers here supported. And I think that, like you said, they're trying to do that with the Latin Americans, especially now. But yeah, I think that's what's really kind of going on here.
Okay, well, that's why I was hoping to get this conversation of like-minded individuals, because we got to codify on the fact that it's not going to happen with the Latinos. They started that shit 400 years ago, bro. The moment those conquistadors put their boots on that beach, they were already looking for the lighter-skinned Negroes to ally with against the Incans, against the Aztecs, against the Mayans, against whatever Olmec remnants were there, against the Bush people in the Amazon. It was literally on site day one. But we keep phrasing it as, oh, they're going to figure out how to do that to us now. And I'm like, no, we're 400 years late to the race war. Like, holy shit.
I was nothing but real spit right there. It's nothing but real spit. Nothing but fire.
Hold on. And furthermore, in those pinned comments, I've gone all the way back to the first white supremacy state on Earth. That was Black Hindu India. They got taken out by the first group of albinos that came from Kazakhstan. Nobody has touched that topic. I've never, in all these years of research and all these years of argument and babbling, no one has ever brought up the Vedic Aryans and what they did, except for real history worldwide. When he confirmed it, that's when I knew I was onto something. I was like, oh shit, they wrote it down into a religious hymn? Like, yep.
The reason that they could get away with doing that is because basically what's happened is they've wiped out the history of the planet and said that before everybody wasn't technologically advanced enough to be able to move too far out from where they were. So basically saying that where people are right now is essentially where they always been. That's basically what it is.
Yes. And if your black ass is not found where you're supposed to be in Africa, you were brought there as a slave. Yeah. That's what I call the slave ship narrative. It's consistent. Every single Anglo society has we picked up some Negroes and brought them over here with us or after us, but never, ever were they here before us. Don't look at those bones. Don't you fucking look at those skulls. It's insane. We're in a dystopia just off the bat.
Man, you on fire right now, Lou. You on fire. Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Remind me to post the Caribbean skulls they found. Because they have skulls.
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into that. Listen, you got archaeology, Lou. Make sure you got that on deck.
Yeah, hold on. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
We're going to get into archaeology. And when we do that, definitely put that up. Continuing the topic on our cultural dishes. Again, sweet potatoes, yams, things like that, lima beans. So anyway, when I bring up those topics, one thing I found, Leo Weiner, who was a Harvard scholar, he spoke 30 different languages. He was a linguistic professional. He has other accolades as well. But anyway, he found that sweet potatoes, yams, and manioc were found in mummy packs. And because the food for common people was chiefly due to Negroid influence, in these mummy packs, you will find also Negroid skeletons that are also put up in a jumbotron. You pervasively see Negroid hair as well in these mummy packs. So he was definitely onto something when he found a lot of this correlation.
Is this the information that you just found, or is this new shit?
I found this a couple days ago when I was doing some more research before today. Leo Weiner identified mummy packs with Negroes in them.
Hell no. Yeah. Did you post it in Jumbotron already?
Yeah, right there. You can see the pictures up there in Jumbotron.
Ain't love
it's it. The first one. You see it?
I see it. Okay.
But hold on. So yeah, barbecue, which Lou already mentioned as well. Watermelons. Watermelons, according to NCBI, was not over here in America, but it was in Northeast Africa. And the remains are as old as 5,000 years ago. And quote, that the tray has been found in an Egyptian tomb as well.
Hold on. Watermelons were also an aphrodisiac used in Kemetic Egypt. So that makes sense.
Yep.
Oh, and the story of Adam and Eve. The apple that Eve bit into was probably a watermelon, because racist white people.
Absolute. Unless anybody else has any other food they wanted to mention with that continuity, I was going to mention also get into different other continuities here.
Oh, hold on. We forgot the biggest food group. Drugs. Don't forget cocaine mummies. Yeah. The cocaine mummies, baby.
Yep. It was a Russian woman who identified that in the hair of Ramses II, was it?
I heard it was pretty much the entire working class of that time period.
No, I'm saying the person, right? I'm saying the person who found it and exposed it.
Yeah, they that case is interesting because, you know, they did a whole smear campaign on that whole little argument against, well, it was contaminated or something like that. You know, they tried to make a little shit up or whatever, but it was another chick. She did a camera study, and she just kind of, and I posted because I got to save. But it was another chick. She mentioned just how ridiculous it was that, you know, they were just kind of going through hurdles and hoops to try to disprove something that was just kind of obviously, you couldn't disprove it, you know. So, but yeah, she kind of went step by step on like the common like tropes against, you know, why it was legit and shit. Like she just shitted on everybody who had shit to say about it. And I post the study because I got it saved on my blog post. But yeah, it's real in depth, and she even gets into the psychology of, you know, why are these people so obsessed with trying to prove that the Africans couldn't have made it to the Americas. Like she really gets into it. So I'll post that soon.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that, quite a few scholars, when it comes to the Olmecs in particular, Ivan Vance or Tima made it very clear that not all of the people were African or Black in phenotype. So I think that's important to note as well. It wasn't just him. I think Leon Weiner as well, Clyde Winters, Rashidi, Renoko Rashidi as well. But they did play a pivotal role, and I think we see that when we really look into a lot of the continuity that we break down here. One of the next continuities I wanted to break down, like you said, Lou brought it up, tobacco, drugs, or smoking. I read a thing also, Leon Weiner. It was necessary to go once more over the American side of the tobacco smoking, since it has become apparent that it has derived from the Negro habit. In Nicaragua, smoking in our sense of the world is already reported in the year 1529. August 19, 1529, in the square of Nicoya, Don Alonso reported, "And every one of the Indians mentioned held one of these leaf rolls, which they called Yapaquite, and in the language of the island of Haiti and Hispaniola, it was called Tahaco." In 1547, he still reported the same account, but in 1557, they composed a larger work and correctly stated that tobacco was the thing that was being smoked. And that was an account for 1529. In Nicaragua, modern-day Costa Rica. In the Charatoga language of the Nicaragua is corrupted that these people were smoking, and I have already pointed out the probability was of a lot of these namesakes that Leo Weiner pointed out was from a Mayan language. And I have already pointed out that yellow, in all its likelihood, a smoke word of a Mandingo origin. Oh shoot, we lost Trey. He should be coming back. But yeah, and that continuity of smoking would have been identified as well, just again, as early as 1529. Then cowrie shells. Oh. Trader.
Yo.
All right, I just want to make sure you're there. All right, cowrie shells as well. In the present volume, I muster the information accessible as the presence in America of tobacco, cotton, and shell money. Cowrie shells were found to be used as currency, like in Africa, and often buried with excavation royals. Burial 23 from the Yaksuma showed limpet and cowrie shells. So it's interesting that they would have also been using cowrie shells as a form of currency. And I'm standing in Jumbotron of Burial 23.
Hold on. About the cowrie shell thing, did anyone remember that it was Columbus who wrote in his diaries that he followed a large West African trade fleet over to the Caribbean?
No.
Hell no.
Oh, really?
That was in his diary? Okay.
Yeah. He did the trip like, what was it, four times or wrote four books or something? Mm-hmm. But it was mentioned in Tariq Nasheed's Hidden Colors. And then I asked about it, and someone sent me a video from a white professor literally quoting from the book, and was like, yeah, Columbus says he followed West Africans to the New World.
Oh, you mean he said that he got maps from West Africans?
No. He got the maps from the Blackamoors in Spain. He was there when the last palace fell. He literally watched them leave. He's like, oh, there go all those black people. And then he rushed down to the library, got their maps, hired two Blackamoor navigators, two black brothers, built the fleet, got on board, went down to West Africa, down to Central Africa, and waited. And when the African trade fleets headed west into the Atlantic, he followed them, and he wrote that in his journals. So he's like, yeah, my job is to follow them and find out where they're going. And when
you got the PDF of it?
No, I had the video clip. Someone posted a video clip of it, but I don't know how to search Twitter so well, so I got to go back and see if I can. I hope I linked it or liked it or bookmarked it somewhere. But someone put together the clips of the white lecturer reading from Christopher Columbus's own journals, and he's like, why are we confused about Africans making it to the New World before Europeans? He literally says he did just that to find the New World. So it was never a mystery. Like, they know West Africans came here, because when Columbus got off on the islands, he also said, and him and other explorers also said, the Carib Black Indians are speaking a pidgin language. Pidgin. And it pretty much means like a mixed up mulatto language. It's not quite Carib, it's not quite African, and it's not quite Islamic.
Yeah, I know you said that he found a mosque in Cuba. I know that.
Yeah. Everybody knew about the New World except for the Europeans, is what that clue indicates. They don't want to acknowledge that.
As a matter of fact, I think it's a book that actually says that Mexico was the last stronghold of the color races or something like that. It's a quote. I'll find it in
I think that's the one I posted.
Yeah, so all we got to do is track down those video clips about the Christopher Columbus journals. And they still won't believe Christopher Columbus, even though they executed him on suspicious charges. I wonder why. They probably said they were black people. Oh, man.
Hey, you dropping jewels, Luke.
Yeah, hold on. Another thing I do, I don't stop to get the bookmarks. I just read the data itself, add it to my like modeling of what happened, and then I move the fuck on. Years later, somebody will trigger my memory and be like, oh, well, we can't confirm that or this. And I'm like, but wait, isn't there an account of somebody saying specifically they saw that thing happen? It's like, why are you telling me it didn't happen when somebody wrote down that they saw it happen? Because I read that article years ago. And then people will be like, well, go find it. And I'm like, that's like 10 years of thousands of articles. I have nowhere to begin because I did not bookmark all this shit. I still don't even have the logic for why we are having these debates with white people, that they shouldn't be included in indigenous discussions at all. They're not indigenous to anywhere except Kazakhstan. And they prove that themselves.
Wow. Yeah.
Hold on, just so I'm not misunderstood. The conversation we're supposed to be having about indigenous status is black people to other black people. That's it. Like, we got to explain this to Africans. We got to explain to the Caribs. Like, hey, Caribs, you're the black Caribs. You're the natives of the island, just like the French merchant said in his journal that he wrote down and gave to the British, who also wrote it down and said, oh, that Frenchman's crazy. Black people don't own shit in the Caribbean. I was like, okay. I was like, that's it? Like, Africans come here and say, oh, we're all from Africa. Okay, if white people are from Africa as well, why don't white people claim African ancestry or heritage? Why do black Asians have to claim Africa? Why do black Europeans for tens of thousands of years of migration have to claim Africa when people who are closer to Africa, who just so happen to be a little bit more inbred, don't claim Africa? Looking at you, Anglo-Arabs. They don't claim Africa. They all know they're from Africa. They don't do it. But every time, black people have to claim Africa. It's like, why? Like, the people in Papua New Guinea, they have African traditions. They have African mummification. They have scarification in the alligator style. Okay, they're clearly an African culture. Do they claim African heritage and inheritance?
They also got sickle cell.
Yeah, so they have everything that says, oh, that's an African splinter group. Cool. They're in Asia. Call them Black Asians. Call them Afro-Asians. You do not call them Africans. That is a lineage they do not belong to anymore, because those motherfuckers been out there on those islands for 50,000 years by themselves with no help from Africa, and that's if they remember they come from Africa. Some of them do, like the blacks in Hawaii. 100 years ago, the British showed up and said in the 1800s, hey, they were singing songs of a place called Africa when we got to Hawaii. Why is no white person bringing that up? Why is no black person bringing that up? The Hawaiians remember Africa with revenants. Oh, that makes them African. They're tying their culture to African heritage. And no one has ever called a black Hawaiian in Africa.
But the DNA.
Oh, man. And it,
you echoing too, though.
Yeah, as far as Hawaii, did you know that that Ali is a royal name in Hawaii?
Oh, I am so shocked.
What is
Wait, Ali? A-L-I.
I've heard people make claims that they were Muslim down there too. Which would make so much sense.
Wait, hold on, somebody's echoing. Go ahead, Romo.
Yeah, which would make some sense because I've seen them wear fez like hairdressers.
Oh yeah.
Hold on. There was a Blackamoor expansion into Asia and the Philippines, like in the last 1,000 years or so. So I wouldn't be shocked if the Blackamoor remnants made it all the way to Hawaii from the other end.
For some reason, that's all this linkage to Africa and blackness, you know, that's blasphemy to, you know, the Western establishment, academia.
But again, what they've done is they've wiped out the history of the planet to make it seem like nothing interesting ever happened. No people ever moved and had contact with each other. So if you say there were Muslims in Hawaii, that sounds crazy. The same way if you say it was in America or Hebrews in America, that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I just put it in the Jumbotron.
Lou, you okay? Lou, you here, right?
Ancient Black American history.
Yeah, there's a genuine effort, like you said, around just a gaslight. And like I said, I got a blog post on Egypt Search and on the color and shit. It get a lot of traction, but you know, and that's really what I kind of lay down. You know, just the massive effort to gaslight, you know, just the correlations between multiple parties to tell us that we're crazy and you're exaggerating and shit like that. You know, it's
Trey, like, you ain't it's, crazy, bro. And I'll just say, tell my brothers, like, how you guys are doing this evening?
Yo.
Good. All right, so I'm going to continue the topic into the liquor, right? All right, so Moonshine is made from corn. Again, another American staple here, and moonshine will be within that continuity. And
Bantu, cone liquor.
Say it again. Cone liquor. Yes.
That's what country old people say. Cone liquor.
You know, oh yes.
Doesn't moonshine have some, you know, some type of sugar in it? Like, I never tried it before. I heard, you know, the ingredients, you know, as you mentioned, corn, then they put sugar, then some other ingredients in it. Like, I don't know how it's made, though. No, like, you guys have to tell me.
I'm not even going to. I ain't no country folk. Like,
they do that shit. Nah, they
put a lot of sugar in it.
I know moonshine. I think moonshine is made from corn. I think, and
no, it is made from corn.
Yeah, they do it.
Put corn if they put sugar in it. I wouldn't doubt if they people put some sugar in it as well.
No, you got to put sugar in it. Yeah, you got to put sugar. Like, because I mean, like, you can make liquor just from leaving berries out.
Yeah.
So, but you got to have like some sugar or something. Like, the sugar does
being fermented, the fermentation
process. Yeah, so you got to have some type of sugar in there with the corn to let that shit ferment. So yeah.
But are we adding sugar though?
No, I think it's essential to the fermenting process, because basically the shit got to kind of rot a little bit, and when
yeah.
And I don't want to say rot, but that's what it is.
But that's kind of what fermenting is. Yeah, it kind of is a process of a rot a little bit.
Yeah. I guess that's my own drink. Yeah, motherfuckers will do anything to get drunk, man.
But yeah, so moonshine, again, made from corn. In Bantu countries of Africa, there is a made liquor known as pombe. A description of a preparation of pombe was given to João dos Santos in 1605. The wine, he said, usually drunk by these kafirs, is made of millet and is called pombe. And again, if you look up what pombe means, it is an African beer made from millet. It continues that the same Negro pomberos were active in America is shown by a large number of documents. The Spanish did not develop the word pombe, but stuck closer to the Latin pulpa as a base of the word for native liquor, hence pulperia, a shop that was made in the Indies called pulperia or pulqueria. From pulquic, the intoxicating drink used by the Indians of New Spain. They were drinking Bantu liquor.
That's deep. That's
deep. And I posted that in the charm as well. I told you I had those receipts for the millet beer, right? You always have.
Yeah. Let me say something real quick. We got a lot of guests in here. Are y'all trying to debate, or are y'all trying to?
Well, yeah, let's just let them know we are going to be having guests in for the second half of the discussion. So just stick around with us. We're just going to go through all the facts as we know it, and then we'll just invite you up. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, if I could just say one thing right quick.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I put that in the Jumbotron, dog. Ali is a term of nobility in Hawaii. How ironic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I see that.
Damn. I mean, I wouldn't call that ironic here, you know. Like,
that's wild, like, because Hawaii is the most isolated place on earth. You know, mm-hmm. But motherfuckers still make it there, you dig?
Yeah, for, you know, folks that used to travel to, like, Hawaii, you know, I wouldn't doubt that, you know, somewhere in a point of time, you know, the people from Asia or it could be, you know, like Vikings or Africans, or it could be anybody just traveling to like Hawaii. I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, Hawaii. Yeah, that oral tradition Lou was talking about them, you know, calling back to Africa and shit, like a mayor. I think he had made a call back to Africa and shit, you know, for some reinforcements for his kingship authority and whatnot. But yeah, it's an oral tradition there. But yeah, that's interesting with the Moore situation that Aramo highlighted, man. That's very interesting. They got the word Ali and you know, nameless. That's yeah. I heard about the Cherokees who got the Cherokee chiefs with the Muslim last names and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. I can go into that.
Yeah, that is definitely more of them.
but again, what's
no, they got it from the pilgrims.
Yeah, but what's the largest Muslim country in the world?
The largest Muslim
Nigeria?
Country is Saudi.
No. It's Indonesia.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right, but the thing is, that may that's all cool to say in quote unquote modern times, but to say that there were people going anywhere else, like to the Americas in some other time, that just has to be, that has to be completely written up. So we could make it to somewhere like Indonesia, but not to America.
It's ridiculous. And I mean, like I said, that's just, that's just this billion dollar effort to gaslight, make motherfuckers think they crazy. It's just like, nah, I ain't with it. I ain't with it.
Yeah, I'm a, wait, is Lou still here? I want to make sure. Because it's showing like a blue dot. I wasn't sure. He's still here.
Yeah, it is showing like a blue dot. Yeah, I was tripping, man, too. I didn't know what the hell that was.
I'm going to remove him and add him again. I just added him.
All right,
so yeah, I put up in the Jumbotron the Indian ovens that were also in comparison and similar to also in ancient America and also in Africa as well. And that was a picture you'll see in the Jumbotron with the similar style ovens. Also, now we're going to get into the mounds. I'm sure once we get Lou back, he got something to say about that. We got the Serpent Mound in Ohio, North America, another divine correlation there in ancient Kemet when we were talking about these mounds and the correlation to snakes and then divinity. Leo Weiner had traced the Arabic name for his starred hat through the Mande language, and the same name for this hat is found in Mexico, Coahuila, Cofila, in Mexico, Copila. It was all pronounced roughly the same, and that hat or this crown was found often or sometimes with near these mounds when they did excavations for them. The crown was also worn by Quetzalcoatl as well, who is also was an Aztec or Mayan god. Also, is what's the face? Lou, he's tweeting.
Yeah, Lou said he can't get up in here. He said he's having
caught up in problems.
I don't know. He's saying he can't find, like, the link is saying space unavailable. Like, yeah, I think he got to reset his app or something.
Yeah, because like if you're on Android, you know, you have to click on the app setting, then you have to force to stop it, and then
you got to do all that.
Yeah, like this app is not, you know, running too good since Elon Musk fired pretty much half the block, and you know, so right now this app is, you know, it's kind of janky a little bit.
Oh yeah, I see that. Oh dang. So yeah, I posted up the speaking of mounds, I posted up the African stockades and the American stockades. And these stockades were often built on the mounds. Leo Weiner, again, on his strength and similarity, he observed between the type of African defense structure and the American mound building, argues a direct African influence and claims the mounds are African-type stockades. His comparative plates are revealing. The influence of Africa on medieval American pipes is best demonstrated by the animal motifs found on these pipes. Most of the sculptured monitored pipes found in the mound represented animals. Among these are 7 pipes that represented the Manti or a sea cow. The sculptures of this animal, say Square and Davis, are the same type that you would likely find in the material with the other found mounds in the area. It's also interesting that you will often find these mounds or these pipes that was mentioned to often have African elephants on them as well. These were found not only by archaeologists, but sometimes even by regular folks. Anybody can just go ahead and Google that if they wanted to check that out as well. It was noted that Black Africans appear in and on early designs of artifacts, delineating an African morphology that often been found throughout the Western Hemisphere. For example, five large solid granite heads, which we're talking about in Veracruz, Mexico, and the canton of Taxila. Furthermore, burial mounds have been found in various sectors of the United States in which fossil men comparable to West African type of the pre-Columbian era have been excavated. So not only were they finding these pipes, these stockades, they're also finding archaeological finds of these skeletons.
That's wild. That's wild. Especially with them elephants, man. I saw a artifact with a rhino on it too.
With a rhino too?
Yeah, rhino. I think it was like gold or something.
Yeah, they say it's pervasive with just animals. And I think, again, another similarity we see here is the fact that totems are involved. Totems are, especially animal totems, are
essentially African.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. So these African totems or these animal totems are, again, a lot of this correlation that we're just going to continue to see, that's going to be exerted here. Dr. Claude Winters, when I was doing some research as well, he found apparently there was also a similar standing artifact that I'm about to post right now in the Tron that he found in the mounds and also similar to Africa. I think it was the terracotta, African terracotta. There you go. I put up in the Jumbotron, and you'll see that seated with the, you know, the kneel of the knee, and then hand placed on there. Very similar stature that he identified there with that correlate. And then
I'm about to check it.
Go ahead. You got something to say?
Oh, I see it.
Oh, you see it right there, right? That was from Dr. Clyde Winters, who found that correlation there I was looking at earlier, and he wanted to make note of that. And you see kind of that similar correlation there, not only just in the stance, but also, you know, at least from what I can see as well, also with the similar, I guess, structure and how they kind of built it in the face. And then we also have the wars. There's a lot of wars we could cover. I didn't have enough time to go through all of them, but we do. Go ahead.
Like the Amasi War and shit? Yeah. I think that's,
yeah, a lot of those wars. The Seminole Wars, of course, Tariq Nasheed is going to be mentioning that in depth about the Maroon Wars as well. One that may not be well known is called the Pequot War.
Pequot.
Okay, absolute. And it was the last major conflict between the English settlers and the Indian tribes in New England. And the a lot of survivors were sold into slavery. And interestingly enough, it was these people were pushed into the Bermudas. You know that in the Bermudas, there's a big pervasive black population there, and they celebrate a man named Jacob Miner every year, and he is very much portrayed so as a black man. In one excerpt, it says that the colony of Massachusetts, by law passed in 1652, ordained that the Indians who were taken or surrendered themselves as well into the war of the what was being had for Station Phillip were either to be sold and shipped to the Bermudas and other parts and reduced to slavery in New England. So again, Jacob Miner is one of those people they celebrate every year. If you did Google the Bermuda people and Jacob Miner and how they celebrate him, you'll see a lot of that pervasive element as well within the culture, and I'm going to post a picture of him as well, apparently in the Jumbotron.
Nah, that's cool. I mean, that shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think this. I wanted to at least identify that because I think that one was probably one that is probably isn't as known for most people. I wanted to also now touch on to then we're going to get into the witnesses, the antiquity witnesses of quite a few people, not even just with Columbus. Many people might have heard of what Columbus has talked about as his witness. Again, his comes from him, that the Indian, the Redskin natives telling him that by the time he had entered around 1492, that there, those were black-skinned people that came from the south and the in the southeast, and they had their spears that were brought from them that were of parts of gold and what have you, and that was one of his witness testimonies there. But then we're also going to talk about voyages of like John Smith, in which Aromo talked about. Romo, you want to expound upon that? You posted it.
Yeah, I love it. You said John Smith? Like, you him?
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. Yeah, John Smith.
Yeah, it's a physical description of Chief Powhatan, who was chief of the Powhatan Confederacy at the time. You know, from the Pocahontas movie.
Right.
And the description that it says is, Powhatan more like a devil than a man, with some 200 more black as himself. That's the quote.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and John Smith was very much telling his story about how dark these people would have been, as well as voyages of Giovanni da Verrazzano, if I'm saying that correctly as well. He also went on to say that they are dark in color, not unlike the Ethiopians, with thick black hair, not very long, tied back behind the head like a small tail. And I actually was reading on something as well. There's something pervasive about these top knots. And I don't think I added it to my notes, but I think I would have to look into that later. But yeah, top knots were pretty much a thing as well. And again, Giovanni has correlated that with his testimony also. There's also a Spaniard named Toribio de Modalinha. He was born in 1482, died in 1569 in Mexico City, Mexico. He went on to say that in 1532, the Indians were compelled to plant those things in which they had to render as a tribute. And mayordomos or calipic were placed over them to see that the work had been done. These palapiquis were chiefly Negroes who immediately after the conquest treated the Indians with great severity. So if you even look into, so again, like he said, these were Negroes who were chiefs, as he wanted to explain with his testimony. And then if you also look into the definition of calpixque, which is C-A-L-P-I-X-Q-U-E, the definition from Encyclopedia says that the definition of that language is Spanish dictionary means, in colonial times, a foreman commissioned by the encomendores of the government of the Indians for their... I don't even know what that word is. but they were actually basically people who were going around basically being chiefs who collected taxes. It was a collection of taxes, and they were the chief Indians of a particular tribe. So that would be, again, double downing on the fact that when they arrived in America around these times, that they were encountering chief-level Negroes, is how they put it. There's another one. He's regarded as the first historian of America, Peter Martimer. He reports on this remarkable meeting between the Spanish explorers and the blacks of Darien. The Spaniards wrote that Martimer had found Negroes in the province, and they only live one day's march from Quirqua, and they were fierce, and it is thought that these Negro pirates from Ethiopia established themselves after the wreck of ships in these mountains. Again, that's just his thoughts of how they arrived. And also, when we're talking about Ethiopians, we don't mean specifically Ethiopians from Ethiopia. They mean actual just Africans from the general placement of the continent.
Yeah, not Abyssinians.
Right. It's a lot of big headness with that confusion.
Yeah, I got one more.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just put it up in the Jumbotron. And basically, it's a speech that was delivered June 16th, 1846 in the House of Representatives. And it was given by the president of the Confederacy, Alexander Stevens. So again, this is the president of the southern part of the United States. And I'll read the quote that he said in his speech.
You're talking about the one where he acknowledged that Mexico and Point South was like the region of the Moors and shit?
Yeah, gotcha. Let me find. All right, it says, the stupendous deserts between the Rio Grande and Del Norte rivers are the natural boundaries between the Anglo-Saxons and the Mauritanian races. I'll say that one more time. The stupendous deserts between the Rio Grande and the Del Norte rivers are the natural boundaries between the Anglo-Saxons and the Mauritanian races. There ends the Valley of the West. There Mexico begins. Thence, beyond the Bravo, begin the Moorish peoples and their Indian associates, to whom Mexico properly belongs. That's a quote from the House of Representatives, 1861, where he's calling what at that time was Mexico, but today is Texas.
Right.
He's calling that the natural boundary between the Mauritanian races,
right,
where the Moorish peoples live with their Indian associates.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part about that is that's over 100 years before the country of Mauritania now existed. Before there was a Mauritania in Northwest Africa, there was one in Mexico, which is today Texas.
Yeah, I definitely got to save that one for my archives. Yeah, that was a good find. Oromo come through with the shit, man.
And one thing they want to make us believe, one thing they want to make us believe is that all of these people that are in Texas today, which used to be a part of Mexico, they just recently migrated there.
Mm-hmm.
They're just all of a sudden there's all these black people in Texas. But you know,
cap. It's all cap.
Yeah, that's definitely something I definitely need to add to my archives, and then some straight facts, like we said, people coming through with the real established documents. One thing I wanted to also expound upon was Ivan Van Sertima touched on the fact that there was two conferences of American anthropologists that had contributed to a change that he was seeing at his time that we still have not fully seen that full change yet. But again, in the International Congress of the Americanists held in Barcelona in 1964, at which a French anthropologist said that the only things missing in connection with the Negroid terracottas of ancient America as final proof was African presence or the Negroid skeletons, in which we know now has obviously been found abundantly. I don't want to say pervasively because I keep saying that. Has been found abundantly all since the years of this conference. In May of 1968, to discuss the problems of pre-Columbian contact between the continents, and they concluded, surely there cannot now be any question, but there were visitors in the New World from the old and historic or even prehistoric time before 1492. So that this had already been building momentum during that time of this conference in the 1960s. And again, the only thing at the time they were so-called holding on to was the abundance or even the archaeological find at the time of Negroids. And we do know, I think somebody mentioned it earlier, about how we did, in fact, find Negroid skeletons in abundance. NCBI covered it as far back as the Paleo-American time. That is around 12,000 years ago. And that's been found, again, abundantly all throughout time. They found it in the around the Olmec settlements as well. The Smithsonian with Oxford University also found skeletons in the Virgin Islands as well. Skeletons found in the mounds, again, of Ohio and Louisiana, where we found a lot of these mounds, finding Negroid types within the Americas.
Yeah, I've heard many people say that they do excavations here regularly, like in America, and they regularly find Negroid skeletons and stuff, but they just don't report it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of the ignorance or the erasure that we tend to see here, and it's fine, but you know, and we know that I think it was the people who initiated that or found that, I think they got fired for a lot of that work. Even Leo Weiner, after he published, he had been publishing lots of things for a year with Cornell University, with Harvard. It wasn't until he started doing his volumes of the connections between Africa and the Americas and what he found with his degree or his expertise that he was eventually fired for finding a lot of this correlation and camaraderie here. So yeah, the erasure is always going to be there, and we already know why. Even when it comes to Leo Weiner, he was even during his time, even though he was battling in some sort of ways racism, he was still in some forms of fashion you can call racist himself as well. And
searching
out the case. What did you say, Troy?
I said a lot of the time, see, this is what people like. See, this is something they use to try to discredit the work of a lot of these earlier anthropologists and whatnot. They try to say, oh, well, they use racialized theories and whatnot. They use typological approaches. But the point of the research is to give a description of a phenotype exhibited from the skull. That is the way you determine how somebody looks. And when people try to say, oh, well, he used
Find full episodes of the podcast featuring straight facts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, check out our Instagram for more Murak Oris content, including the shop and our subscription service for exclusives. Peace, Murak, and I'm Murak.